Good evening and welcome to Consider This Live, where we ask you, the listeners, to consider the issues of the day here on Northumberland 89.7 FM. I'm Robert Washburn. Normally, I'm the community producer for Consider This Live, but Dave Glover's away, so I'll be your host for this show. As part of our municipal election series, I'm interviewing two candidates for a local council seat. Our first guest is Cobourg Councillor Brian Darling, who's running for a second term on council. We will be talking to him about the past 4 years and what he has in mind for the next four. So I'm looking forward to talking to him until about the bottom of the hour. After this, I'll be talking to Ian Everdell, who's running for Port Hope Council. He's a neophyte politician looking for his first term. I'm looking forward to talking to him about his platform and some local issues when he arrives around 6:30. We have a great show, but before we get to the interviews, we have a request song from Brian Darling, and here's Van Morrison's Brown Eyed Girl.
Hey, where did we go? Days when the rains came down in the hollow, playing a new game, laughing. Skipping and a jumping in the misty morning fog with a heart's a thumping and you, a brown eyed girl. Slipping and sliding all along the waterfall with you, a brown eyed girl. Do you remember when we used to sing sha la 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 la, just like that? You have grown. Cast my memory back there, Lord. Sometimes I'm overcome thinking about making love in the green grass behind the stadium with you, my brown eyed girl. You, my brown eyed girl. Do you remember when we used to sing?
Welcome back. That was Van Morrison and Brown Eyed Girl. I'm pleased to welcome our first guest, Brian Darling, to Consider This Live. Hi, Brian.
Hi, Rob.
So what's the significance of Brown Eyed Girl?
Just a long-time favorite.
Oh, isn't that nice? Well, let's get started. Please correct me if I'm wrong, though. I could not find a website or a Facebook page or a Twitter account or any other online campaign stuff other than a download of your campaign announcement and some stories in the local news. And I noted it because so many candidates have a presence on the Internet, and it seems like part of a 21st century campaign. How come you don't?
Well, that's a good question. My daughter came to me, and she said, "Dad, you know, everybody else has got a website and a Facebook." And I said, "Well, I have never done Facebook. Computers were introduced to me late in my career at the fire department, and I never really took to them. So when I got on council and I had to do everything off of a surface, It was a huge learning curve, but I felt that I was out there in the public talking to the people a lot, and I just never really got into it. I guess that's the main reason.
So you're just basically brochures and lawn signs and knocking on doors.
That's it, old-fashioned politics.
What are people saying to you?
Well, it's interesting. The one comment I get a lot is there's no local paper. The people running for council, we only know you. We don't know anybody else. We know Miriam and you. That's the only names I recognize. So the people I talk to that I know, they're the only names they recognize, because there's not that news coverage out there that's keeping track of all the candidates. I mean, there's different websites, just the same as there is for the news stories that are out there. Mm-hmm. And just people just don't seem to be getting the information.
Wow, that's fascinating. So, I mean, it's really coming down then to door knocking and signage in terms of how to be viable in this campaign, according to you.
Well, I think that's a big part of it, and people appreciate that. I mean, I knocked on doors yesterday afternoon for 4 hours, and I didn't get very far. I sat with one couple for half an hour and chatted about our community. Some of the older people just want to chat, and I think that's part of it. As being a good politician, you got to listen to the people.
So you're running for council again, and having already served a term, sometimes we think politicians, you know, move up in positions, and the deputy mayor's job came open. How come you didn't decide to run for deputy mayor and just run for council again?
Well, it was my aspirations to run for deputy mayor. I had numerous people ask me, practically beg me to. My wife was not happy with the fact, because she realized how much more time it would be. Council was a much bigger commitment than original. And, you know, I've got young grandchildren, family things. And basically my wife pleaded with me not to. And she said, I don't mind if you run for council again, but, you know, we have a lot going on in our life at this time. And family's first. I have two loves. Family in this town, but I have to put my family first.
Fascinating. What kind of hours do you put in? Some people may not understand just quite the time commitment that this involves. What would be a typical week for you?
On average, I would say probably 20 to 25 hours a week. I never keep track of it. Like I told another interview at a time, it's almost a 24/7 job, because your mind is on everywhere we go. Somebody's talking, do you mind if I stop you for a minute? You know, in bed at night, if I wake up in the middle of the night, 9 times out of 10, I'm thinking about something that's going on with this town, something coming up, the election, what's on our agenda for next week, trying to figure out where we're going. It's on your mind all the time. So it's very, very life-consuming.
In your announcement, when you did your campaign launch, you talked about fiscal responsibility. I wonder what you mean when you talk about that kind of thing. What are you referring to?
Well, everybody, again, another thing I hear is the taxes are high. And I try to explain to people, you know, that we're small density people, that we're not like Toronto, where we have a huge number of people and taxpayers in one area. And we got to spend the money wisely. Here in town, I think we're very fortunate that we have other sources of income besides our tax base. Very few communities do not have that, or other communities do not have that. And when we look at capital expenditures and whatnot, we have other sources that we're not dipping into
the tax
base.
What are you referring to when you say other sources specifically?
Well, we have the dividends from Holdco, and we have the dividends from Northam Industrial Park. Those help pay a lot of capital expenditures. Some of those capitals, I think it was around the $5 million mark over the last 15 years, that those dividends have purchased equipment, capital expenditures for parks, that sort of thing, where either you don't get it or it would have been on the taxes. So I think in being responsible, if we can keep the tax base down to the real needs and use those dividends to get the wants, such as repairs to the marina, the East Pier, that sort of thing, I think that's being fiscally responsible.
Okay, but let's go back to taxes. You say you want to keep them as low as possible. What do you mean when you're saying as low as possible?
Well, we realize there's inflation out there. I mean, everybody would love to say 0% tax increase, but we've got inflation in everything we buy. I mean, we've got to buy gasoline for our trucks, heating for our buildings, electricity for our buildings. We got to pay wages, and there's negotiated salary increases. All of that stuff is there, and it's going to bump up your costs every year. And if you don't at least maintain inflation or very close to inflation, sooner or later there's going to be a council that's going to say, okay, we either got to cut services in certain areas or we've got to have a 10% increase. And it's happened in the rural areas where they've tried to keep the tax down, no increase, no increase, and then all of a sudden there's a 10% increase.
So where are the fiscal priorities for you then? I know in your literature you talk about the East Pier, Monk's Cove, the Cultural Master Plan. So what are the priorities for you in the next 4 years?
I think the biggest priority, and it's being worked on now, is our asset management plan. It's been legislated by the province that communities have to come up with it. I think we're in a real good spot.
Can we just take a moment to explain to the average listener what an asset management plan is in case they don't know?
Okay. An asset management plan is basically a plan that tells you what you have, be it arena, roads, sidewalks, public buildings, and those buildings have to be maintained, and it costs. So rather than wait till something breaks down or wait till the building's in such a state of disrepair, you've got to look at what the building's worth, what it's going to cost you to repair it over a period of time, and you've got to plan for those expenses. So I think in future it'll mean building reserves to forward when we have the money to do that. So I think that's a part of what the dividend off of Northern Industrial Park, if we can build some reserves so when we do have these major expenses like a new roof on the CCC, the money's sitting there to put it on, that we don't have to go to the tax base at that time and say we need $500,000 or whatever to put on a new roof.
And as you said earlier, the provincial government and the federal government are making this a requirement before they'll give you grants to help pay for some of these expenditures. Is that right?
That's my understanding, yes.
So let's go back to that priority list because, you know, talk about the East Pier, the Monk's Cove, and the Cultural Master Plan. Why do you see the East Pier as being a priority?
Well, it's interesting. Just in the few doors I've knocked on already, that's come up several times, that people were disappointed that they couldn't go out in the East Pier. And again, it's something that's never been looked after. It's just been there and everybody's accepted. So I guess the high water of last year brought out some problems with it. And then the liability of setting up the waterfront rides and everything on that, it's to the point that we've had sinkholes and the town couldn't accept the responsibility anymore that if anything ever happens. So we've done some research. We've had a consultant in. They've done some test holes. They've sent divers around. So then they're going to come back with a cost of what it's going to cost us to repair that.
Have you heard any estimates about how much it could possibly cost?
There's been figures thrown out there, but nothing firm.
Okay. What have you been hearing?
It could go anywhere from, you know, low thousands to millions, who knows?
And do they look at an option of actually taking it out and rebuilding the whole thing, or are they going to try and preserve what's there?
I don't have that information.
Okay, well, the East Pier is part of the marina complex, and there's the Harbor Master Plan, which you were part of developing over the last number of years. How does the East Pier fit into the overall plan for the harbor? Because there's quite a bit of controversy about things like the expansion of the slips, the West Beach, the West Pier, all these kinds of things, and also the trailer park. Where do you stand on what should be done along the waterfront?
Well, the East Pier was probably the one issue that was the least contentious when all the surveys come in. Most of the people wanted the same thing. They wanted to be able to use the pier, have it a people place, have benches out there, be able to go out and sit down and relax. Some didn't want vehicles out there. Most I talked to loved to drive out there. sit and have a coffee in the morning, watch the sun come up, watch the sunset in the evening. When there's a thunderstorm, go out there and watch the thunderstorm. A lot of elderly people, even to park in the parking lots in the North End and walk out onto that pier is quite a walk for some elderly people mm-hmm. and some of those that have handicaps. Mm-hmm. So to make that a real people place and probably not a huge sum of money is to me, like I say, the least contentious, and it'll show people that we're progressing with the waterfront master plan.
Now, what about the expansion of the slips in the marina?
Well, to be honest with you, I feel that's a red herring this election, because the suggestion was there, a recommendation from the consultants to say that it's feasible to do it and that there's room to do it. But it was projected for year 7 of the plan. Mm-hmm. And so with these pier repairs coming up, it'll probably get pushed in the future. I wouldn't suspect that that question will come back for at least 2 terms of council.
Now, what about the campground? Because I know that's another one that people are very sensitive about.
Yeah. Well, again, in the Waterfront Master Plan, the surveys, the majority wanted to keep it. Mm-hmm. And I think for the long term, that's what it will be.
Well, your experience with the master plan has been a bit of a rocky one, because going back a few months, there was a proposal to put out a water park off the beach. And that became very, very contentious, because one part of council said, well, look, we've got this master plan. This fits in with the master plan. We're just implementing the plan. And yet there was a lot of citizens that said, wait a minute, we want to talk about this. We think there should be more public consultation to implement it. You're talking about all these things taking place. Are you going to have public consultation through each phase, or is, because it's in the master plan, it's just going to go forward as it rolls out and as monies become available?
Oh, no, definitely not. There will be public consultation. And I think I don't remember the exact wording of the motion, but in the motion was worded that there will be public engagement and public consultation for every major issue. And every major issue that's going to come up, major proposal, is going to need funding. So it's got to have a plan, what we're going to do, and then can we afford to do it?
Okay, but somebody could be listening to you and saying, well, you really didn't consult on the water park. Why should we trust that you're going to consult us on these other phases?
Well, the water, and I'll be honest, I didn't think the water park would be that contentious. In the surveys and in the questioning, it was finding revenue generation ways to generate revenue. So we wanted to find ways to do that. This water park was not really part of it at the time, and mm-hmm. then all of a sudden the proposal come up. And so we talked about it at our Parks and Rec meeting. We said, this fits in with the revenue generation. Here's a company ready and willing to do it. We don't have to put anything out. They're going to pay us just to set it out there. It's a 2-year trial period. It's not destroying anything. If it doesn't work, they take it out. Mm-hmm. I didn't feel it was that contentious, but obviously it was. And, you know, I think the vote went 4-3. It didn't materialize this year because they couldn't get the staff. That was so late in the season by the time everything got around mm-hmm. that they couldn't get enough lifeguards to do it. I mm-hmm. think the proposal is to try again next year. But, mm-hmm.
Okay, so this leads me into the next part, which is about transparency and openness in council, because often there's been some criticism that council really hasn't been open, and there's been ideas put forward, for example, to have a question and answer period. Are you for a question and answer period during council?
No, I'm not personally. I've talked to a lot of other councillors in other areas, in the municipalities around us, and most say if we didn't have one, we wouldn't introduce one. A lot of the questions that are going to come, you're not going to have the answer at that time, so you're going to have to put the person off, and they're going to feel like you're sloughing them off, which is not the intent. I tend to feel that sometimes is the person there really just to ask a question and get an answer, or are they there just to vent?
So how would you describe council in terms of openness and transparency?
Well, everybody has a different opinion on that. We have, like, every council has an email address. You can get to your questions. I've been getting emails and trying to answer them. We have delegations that come to council. All our committee meetings are open to the public. And there's many ways to bring your concerns forward. sometimes I think it's grandstanding. It tends to happen late in the year when, you know, late in the term when the next election's coming up and you want to get yourself known. A little bit of grandstanding maybe, I don't know.
So is there anything that you'd want to improve or any ideas you have to make it better?
I think we have to try a little harder. I'm sure with this new council that I'm hoping that we can work as well as the last council did. I felt this last council was a very good council to work with. We didn't always agree, but we were very respectful of each other. And I was quite pleased with the success that we had in some of these plans, like the master plans for the urban forest plan, introducing the CIP, which has provided, you know, money for the downtown. And we're actually seeing facades being fixed up, apartments being put above. It's having a lot of effect down there, I think, in a positive effect.
That's interesting, because the next question I have to ask you is about affordable housing. In Coburg, we have a 0.3% vacancy rate. What are you going to do in the next term to improve affordable housing in this community?
Well, I personally, I don't think one person could do anything, but I would like to see us put together some kind of a social planning council and get all the groups in there for a discussion and have a team, police, fire, mental health, the Northumberland County, the town. It's housing is a county priority or a county responsibility, but I think we all got to work together. I would like to see Coburg be able to provide some funding or maybe provide some land, some vacant land, if we could find some that we could provide to the county, which would help decrease the costs of building some affordable housing.
Is there more that can be done, though? Because, I mean, we've seen the kind of NIMBYism that's gone on in the past, and, I mean, it's come before you as a counselor, that people get upset when things start to change in a community. What are you going to do in terms of I mean, it's great to talk about a social council and bringing people together, but that's just more meetings. And there's people out there that are homeless, that don't have – I mean, we're just lucky to have, a transition house is supposed to open sometime this month or next. Coburg Police Station has been the only place where homeless people can go. I mean, can you not give us something more concrete? Is there not something more concrete that council can do?
Well, I mean, there's 36 housing units coming on Monroe Street. They're in the process of being constructed now. We moved that through council fairly quickly to make sure that all the zoning, everything was in place. The county's working with the builder to get that going as quick as possible. The homeless is a very tough issue because it's multifaceted issue. Some people don't want a home. You can't force them into one. So I find it very difficult and a very tough question to answer.
Okay. If people were to have one reason why they should vote for you, what is it?
I guess because I truly care. I've served this community for 35 years now, 31 plus in the fire department in the last 4 years on council. When I talk to people, they feel that they can trust me, that my word is good. I know not everybody agrees with me. I think the polls will show that this time, that there has been some people who are disappointed with some directions in council. But if I've done a good job, you'll get reelected, and if people think I haven't and my word has not been what I said it would be, then maybe I won't get reelected. But, another month we'll know.
Well, I want to thank you, Brian Darling, for being here. We're wishing you all the best in your campaign. We're going to take a break for some commercials, and when we return, Even Everdell will be joining us here on Consider This Live on Northumberland 89.7 FM, your truly local source for news.